This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, hello everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast here. Matt Larkin with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. And yes, it's a podcast. It's a normal podcast. For all intents and purposes, we're talking about a season preview opening puck drop tonight, but it is a special podcast because it is also a live stream. If you're watching the live stream, welcome. Here we are in our little studio. Everybody give a little wave to the camera. Hey, everybody. So we're going to talk a little bit about big picture stuff. We're going to dispense with stupid little storylines like Jason Spezza being scratched. Who cares? Let's talk big picture with a few predictions, okay, for the 2019-20 season, and we're going to get to some reader questions as well, of course, but first, let's talk dark horse Stanley Cup contenders. Everyone knows, you know, Tampa Bay, probably the Stanley Cup favorite after 62 wins, but I want to know, who's your sleeper? We'll start with you, Ryan. Sleeper Stanley Cup pick.
I'm going to go with the San Jose Sharks. I feel like every time we count the Sharks out, that's when they go on their run, much like they did when they went to the final against Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. What excites me about the Sharks right now is that they still have some elite talent, your Eric Karlsson's, Brent Burns, Logan Couture's, Thomas Hertl, but they also have a lot of youngsters coming up that are hungry, fighting for spots. There's that great internal competition. So I think it's a nice mix. You got Joe Thornton coming back for another one-year contract. Is it his last one-year contract? Hard to say, but you know they're going to be gunning for that title because Thornton needs a cup ring. I mean, he's at the top of the list in the current NHL of guys who don't have a championship yet. I feel like Jumbo has to get one. So you put all that together, sure, they're going to need a much better performance from Martin Jones in net, but I think he can be at least serviceable and, you know, maybe even above average if he really gets on things. And there's an opportunity there. I think the West, it doesn't look as stacked. You got a lot of good teams in the Central, but they're going to be battling each other. I think San Jose has the opportunity to be that dark horse because they might not finish first in the division. You know, they've got Calgary and Vegas that are probably ahead of them, but that just gives them the chance to sneak up on folks, and I think it's a possibility.
Okay. You know where I stand? If you listen to the Pacific Preview podcast, I'm bearish on Martin Jones and on the right side of San Jose's forward depth chart, but that's fair. It's a dark horse. It's not a favorite. Horse. Kenny boy, who you got?
Well, bearish, that means not good, right?
Yes. Bullish is good.
Okay. Bearish is okay. Bearish.
Yeah. This is not fair to Bears. What did the Bears do to deserve that?
I don't know.
I like Bears. Anyways,
Sarah Zilia, Bridge Club, or no, he's scared of them.
No, Tigers.
Anyways, oh, was it Tigers?
Well, he likes Huskies.
Yeah, we're really it's going off the rails already. Yeah. But I'm not sure if you can say that my pick is a dark horse pick because the Carolina Hurricanes made the conference final last year. They knocked off the Stanley Cup champion in the first round. So I'm not sure you can say that, but I don't think there are a lot of people out there that are you know, saying that the Carolina Hurricanes are, you know, among that top tier of teams. Uh-huh. But I definitely think they can be. I mean, they're going to be a better team offensively. You know, I mean, their third line is better. I mean, you've got Eric Halla and Ryan Dzingel on your third line. I believe Eric Halla is a really good player who's had some really bad injury luck and will come back and be a really good player. You know, they've supplemented the best, one of the best defense corps in the league with Jake Gardner. So they're going to be able to get the puck up to their forwards. I just think this is a team that it's not going to sneak up on anybody because it's a pretty good team already. But this is a team that I think really, like, it just feels like a team that could really catch lightning in a bottle for a couple of months and ride that for a long way.
Mm-hmm. I like it, and especially Andrei Svechnikov, I think, is one of everyone's favorite breakout picks, and especially if he's going to be sticking with Sebastian Aho on the top
just
line.
Just don't get into a fight with Alex Ovechkin.
Yes, exactly. Don't
get
in a fight.
Face,
it's like
Kate
fighting
Danny.
A bear. Let's go back to the bear thing, okay? I'm going to go with the Florida Panthers as my dark horse. I've been pushing that propaganda. I'm going to sound like a broken record if you've been listening to me talk about the Panthers on the podcast because I've been prophesizing this rematch of the 96 Stanley Cup final. But I'm telling you, okay, the Panthers, the bottom of the Atlantic Division is still pretty weak. You can beat up on those teams, pad your record. And you're adding Joel Quenneville to the equation. You're adding Sergei Bobrovsky. You're adding Anton Strahlman to the blue line. Noel Achary and Brett Connolly to the forward group. Super talented, super deep at forward. And we know the Panthers have underachieved, but I think it's a very different story when Joel Quenneville is behind that bench. I don't think he's going to let that team underachieve. He's going to get every bit of potential out of that team. And he has his Jonathan Toews. He has Sasha Barkov. He has his Keith and Seabrook, I think, and Aaron Ekblad and Michael Matheson. So I think the Panthers are, like, to me, they have a wide range of outcomes. They might miss the playoffs again. They have a very hard October schedule. But it wouldn't even surprise me if the Panthers win the Stanley Cup. So that's my
It would surprise me. I think we're going to know pretty early whether or not you're on track for this one.
Well, they play Tampa back-to-back to start
the season. But I think by the end of October, we'll be like, yeah, these guys are for real, or, yeah, they're being the Florida Panthers again. Yeah. You know?
That's fair.
Yeah.
So let's look at the other side of the coin now and talk about our bust picks. Who's a team that's been hyped and you're just not seeing it? So, Ryan, we'll go back to you for that one.
Well, I'm looking at the Winnipeg Jets, and maybe a lot of people are seeing that as the reality now, the way things have shaken out in the summer. But I think we've seen the Winnipeg Jets as a team that should be competing for a Stanley Cup and should have been competing for a Stanley Cup the past couple of years. I look at the losses they've had, particularly on defense, and the fact that we don't know if Dustin Byfuglien is coming back, and if he does, when. The other thing that concerns me right now is that, yeah, they got Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor signed sort of right before the season began, but those guys weren't in camp. You know, Laine was over in Europe, and I just worry that they're not going to quite be up to speed in terms of just what's going on with the team. So if they get off the slow starts, that's going to hurt the offense. I mean, they're still certainly talented. Any team with Mark Scheifele is going to be very good. But that defense, it just got so rocked over the summer. They knew they were going to lose Tyler Myers. And, you know, the trade for Jacob Trouba looks like they kind of had to make it. But obviously they didn't think they were going to lose Byfuglien as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just so much to recover from. And in that central division where you have, like, five other teams that can be serious contenders, or at least scary, I just worry that the Winnipeg Jets lose like two or three games extra in October, and it ends up sinking them at the end of the year, where another team beats them for that last playoff spot by like a point.
Right, and life in the Central is very tough. And I also wonder, I'm not going off any official evidence, it's more just circumstantial, but what's the culture in that dressing room right now? Dustin Byfuglien's gone from the equation. Jacob Trouba's gone. You have Laine joining late, and Laine was pretty raw and candid about, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be a Winnipeg Jet when he was interviewed back home in Finland. So I just don't know what the vibes are going to be in terms of team chemistry there right now.
I think it's still going to be pretty strong. I do, because yeah. I think in Winnipeg, the one thing that they've done is they've done a very good job of creating that from within as an organization. And Kevin Cheveldayoff, that has been one of his goals since they went back to Winnipeg, was to get, you know, they've done a good job of signing, for the most part, of signing their young players, their good young players, to long-term contracts and convincing them that this is a place where you want to stay and you want to try and win. So I don't think that's going to be a huge factor. I think players understand with Byfuglien, and I mean, you know, I don't know one way or the other, and no one knows, and anyone who says they do is lying. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't care how much money you have, turning your back on $14 million is very difficult. Mm-hmm. So I would expect that Byfuglien will be back at some point this year. When, I don't know. But I think he'll be back. Otherwise, I would have thought that he would just pack it in now, you know, and then say, okay, I'm done. But I think he's going to be back.
Right. It could be like Tuukka Rask, where about a year ago, you know, he was on a personal leave, and then very quickly he's suddenly back. So it didn't turn out to be as serious as people expected. Kenny, I'm going to give you the floor again. So who's your bust pick?
Okay, well, I say this with a full knowledge that this team could, probably won't, but could win the President's Trophy, and I'm going to go with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Not in terms of them not making the playoffs, although people forget, they only made the playoffs by 4 points last year, as you pointed out earlier today, Matt. So, I mean, it wasn't like they were a juggernaut last year. I mean, the playoffs, I think they're going to make the playoffs, and they'll make them easily. But I'm not convinced that this is a team that is built for playoff hockey still. I still don't think it is. And I mean, they made some changes in the back end, but all their changes were on the offensive side of the puck on the back end. So I'm not convinced that this is a team that can play the big boy hockey that you have to play in the playoffs, and they still aren't. And what would concern me about this team even more is you're not going to be able to go out and get someone at the trade deadline this year. Because you're right up against the cap. Like, you are right up against the cap. There will be no room. There will be no wiggle room to even go out and get a defensive guy that can kill penalties or whatever. There just won't be that room to improve. So I still don't see a team yet that's built for the playoffs.
Right. So take that, people who say East Coast bias, Toronto Hockey News, all that stuff. There's a negative Toronto prediction, okay?
Okay.
My bus pick, it might be low-hanging fruit because this team missed the playoffs and picked first overall, the New Jersey Devils. But I'm picking them as a bust just relative to the hype. I noticed I've gotten a lot of questions on Twitter over the summer, you know, can the Devils make the playoffs? And it kind of tells me that a lot of people out there are putting New Jersey in that discussion. I don't think Devils are there yet. I think they're going to be extremely exciting to watch. I'm really excited about those first two lines. Yep. I think they're going to score a lot of goals this year. But goaltending is still suspect between Corey Schneider and Mackenzie Blackwood. Neither guy has really taken the crease. It looks like Schneider's going to get the first look. I don't know if that's even a good thing. I think you wanted Blackwood to win that job outright because Schneider, his body's been breaking down in recent years, so I don't really trust the goaltending long-term. And the defense core. You've added P.K. Subban, which is great, but I think if you look at the overall group, it's not a very physical group. I don't think it's a very tough group to play against, aside from P.K. Subban.
And Wayne Simmons.
Wayne Simmons, yeah. Well, I mean, but that's in the forwards. I'm talking just
D. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that the Devils, they're going to improve. They're going to be really fun.
Yeah.
But I'm just not seeing major standings improvement this year.
Interesting, because, I mean, you're assuming that Taylor Hall is going to be back for the full year. You know, you're assuming that what they brought in is better than what they had. So, I'm a little more bullish.
Yes.
On New Jersey than you are. And I think Corey Schneider, I mean, his first part of the season was so bad that I think it cast a pall over everything because he actually wasn't too bad down the stretch and in the second part of the season. So if he can sort of even be as good as he was down the stretch, I think they might have a chance to make some noise.
I think they'll be okay, but they might get burned by the fact that their division is so up in the air. I mean, yeah. Look at all the different opinions you can have. You know, is Pittsburgh good? Is Pittsburgh bad? You know, like, how good is Washington to be? What about Columbus? I almost wonder if New Jersey could be in the mix for, like, fifth or
first.
You know, even fourth.
Or first.
Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, Washington's on the decline. I think we can all agree that this is a team that's on the decline. Pittsburgh's on the decline. Carolina is a very good team that we don't know about. I mean, I think they could be in the mix.
They could be in the mix, but I could also see New Jersey finishing fourth, but then having the Atlantic send five teams. Like, is New Jersey as good as a healthy and fully functioning Montreal? For example,
it's a good question.
Is Buffalo going to surprise us with, you know, everything new they have there with Ralph Kruger and a lot of new recruits there that can finally help Jack Eichel?
I like Philly to be a surprise team this year too.
Philly could be a surprise team as well. It's just when you get into that part of the standings, there are so many different permutations that I'm just happy with the Devils and the Rangers saying, you guys will be fun. I don't care if you win or lose. It's probably just going to be 5-3 every night, and that's cool.
Yeah. I think the Metro, to me, is the blender division this year. Like, when we were each sort of breaking off and doing our own predictions before we got together, I was just staring. Like, I just stared at the page looking at the Metro teams, and I was just like,
Washington will win, and then what?
It's anybody's guess.
Yeah.
Ryan, your ears are about to perk up because we're going to talk rookies, okay? So we know who the Calder favorites are. I was saying to Ryan in the office earlier today, I think it's a pretty set quartet. It's the Hughes brothers in there. Cale Makar is in there, of course. And the other one is Capocacco, of course. And after that, there's sort of a gap. So I want to talk about the rest of that group and sort of Calder sleepers. So Ryan, we'll start with you. Who's your dark horse to win the Calder Trophy?
All right. This is one where I'm very intrigued by Tobias Bjornfoot in Los Angeles. This is a kid that was just drafted this summer, you know, late in the first round by the Kings, and made the team, made a lot of fans along the way. I know Drew Doughty thinks the world of the kid. He loves his poise. And what's interesting about Tobias Bjornfoot is that he's not a super flashy kid by any stretch of the imagination. Like, he's not one of those darting Eric Brandstrom types. He's not huge, You know, like he's not like a big guy like Philip Roberg, but he's just really solid. He's a good two-way player, no fuss to his game, and he's a leader. He's worn a letter internationally for Sweden already. And on that Kings team, which we don't think is going to be very good, there is a lot of opportunity, and I think that's very interesting. I think Bjornfoot, I mean, if he can get a nice role there, I'm not saying that he's going to get a lot of points, and the Calder tends to go to a player with a lot of points, but I think he can have a nice role there where he could play some solid minutes. I mean, they could still send him back to Sweden for all we know, but he would be my dark horse because I see a lot of potential there that can be realized now. He doesn't have to grow into anything.
What about you, Kenny boy? Who's your dark horse?
Well, I'm looking at Carter Verhaeghe in Tampa. I mean, just by virtue of the fact that he made the team, and he's going to be on the third line, it looks like, with my other favorite player, Yanni Gourde. But, I mean, I think here's a guy, like, he's 24 years old. He's got a lot of pro experience. He won the scoring title in the American League last year. And some guys, it takes them a little longer to get ready to play in the NHL. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be a star in the league long term, but he just appears to be the kind of guy that's in the kind of situation where he might be able to make something happen. And you never know. He maybe moves up the lineup a bit if there's an injury. He gets a bit of power play time. He's on a team that's going to score a lot. So I think the table's set quite nicely for him.
Mm-hmm. And we know there's a history with Tampa of just finding those diamonds in the rough with Yanni Gourde and Tyler Johnson. This is one of the best farm systems in the league, consistently turning guys that are overlooked into legitimate, not just like grinders, actual legitimate, like high-scoring NHL forward.
Yeah, this guy wasn't overlooked, though. He was drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. He was a draft.
But he's not like he was a first-round pick.
No, yeah.
He slipped through the cracks,
right,
exactly.
Right, right.
The guy that I'm going to pick for my dark horse, I just can't... I every time I just look at the, you know, preseason stories and just sort of following who's generating the buzz, I get more and more excited about this guy, Victor Olofsson. He's fascinating because he doesn't... I'm going to write about this actually later today. He doesn't check the typical rookie boxes. It's not like he's a first-round pick. In our Future Watch magazine last year, he was Buffalo's number 7 prospect.
Yeah.
A year ago, he's 24 years old.
Yeah, I believe this was his 17th training camp.
Probably, right? But he's sort of just gradually crept his way up the system. And a couple of years ago, he leads the Swedish league in goals. Last year, he goes to the AHL and he rips like 30 goals in 60 games, give or take. Gets a couple with the Sabres as well. And Ralph Kruger, the new coach, really impressed with him. He's got a really good shot. Every time I read anything or watch him or hear anything about Victor Olofsson, there's just rave reviews about his shot. And here we are. He's going to open the season on the left wing with Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart. He's been demoted, I know, on paper, but it's just a cat move. He's going to be on the team to start the season. And to me, especially if you look at like Hughes and Kako, the other forwards, Cody Glass, guys like that, they're really exciting rookies, but they're more likely to be playmakers in terms of their goal scoring to assist ratio. Yeah. So I actually think Victor Olofsson is a legit dark horse to lead all rookies in goals this year. That's my guy. Okay. So now it's time to go to you, the listeners or the viewers now, with some questions from Twitter, courtesy of our producer, Steven. Hey, Steven, he's on his phone right now. He's just like, yeah, okay, thanks, Steven. But he sent us some questions, okay?
What do you got for us? Oh, you've got them. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. So the first question is from Astern51, and Astern says, who gets more power play points this year, Jacob Trouba or P.K. Subban? To me, it's not even close. I know Jacob Trouba is going to get a much bigger role in New York, but Subban, just with all those forwards, he's set up. I think Subban's going to have the biggest offensive numbers of his career if he's healthy this year.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one. Yeah, I mean, you look at that setup they have, and speaking to guys with New Jersey in the summer, it's like that's what they lacked was the big booming shot from the point. Subban certainly has that, and he's more than willing to use it, so it just seems like a nice weapon, and you can't really key in on it when you got guys like Hall and Heischer and Hughes that are going to be buzzing around elsewhere in the zone. So it sets up really nicely for Superman.
Yeah, I mean, better team, better power play, more productive player. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's pretty hard to argue against that. Yeah. Although Trouba may be a better all-round defenseman than PK Subban in all when you take all facets of the game, but you know, with Subban's offensive bent, his shot, the fact that he's going to be playing on a better team that has a better power play, I would think it's going to be PK.
Yeah, and I think if Subban, like, if he plays 75 games, I think he's absolutely going to be a threat for the Norris Trophy. And again, if the Devils exceed expectations as well, because he's going to play monster minutes. He's not part of that big four in Nashville where, you know, the Yossi Ellis pair is siphoning away a lot of minutes. Like, Subban's going to play as much as he wants to in New Jersey, I think. And if you look at, like, especially the projected first power play unit, if it's like, you know, Taylor Hall's out there, maybe Heischer and Hughes are both out there together, and Kyle Palmieri and Subban will be there too. Like, if you go back to Montreal and then include Nashville, I don't know if Subban's ever had this offensive system or just group of forwards to play with.
Right.
So, like, just even just guys to bang in the rebounds or tip in his shots.
Yeah.
So I feel like Subban's going to have a monster year if he's healthy. Next question is from Joel21, and Joel says, how good can Elias Pettersson be this season? What is your goal and point prediction? So, Kenny, I'll start with you this time.
Well, he came into camp much bigger, much thicker. He's obviously had that great rookie season. I mean, he really tailed off, though, which at, you know, sort of in the second half of last year. I thought that he was exceptional in the first half of the season and fairly ordinary in the second half of the season. I would have to think that that's going to change this year now that he's got a season under his belt and he's familiar with the rigors of an NHL season. What do you have, 66 points last year?
I believe so, 66.
How many of those were goals? 29, 30?
Give or take, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I can see a 35-35, 35-40. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, originally I was going to say I could see him hitting 85, but I think that might be next season. I think maybe this season is kind of 75 because, you know, going back to what we were talking about with Subban, what's the Vancouver power play going to look like? I mean, you're going to have Besser. That's a great weapon, but
you're probably going to have Quinn Hughes on the back end of
that. Yeah, you'll have Hughes. There'll be some good puck movement and whatnot. So they'll have, like, a pretty good power play, but I don't know if it's going to be super dynamic outside of Pettersson. So with that in mind, I think 75 is probably, you know, like, going with a sort of 35, 40 assists, something around that. And then, of course, you know, is Brock Besser healthy all year? Because that'll have some impact on Pedersen's points overall as well.
Interesting. I'm going to go back to the bear and bull analogy. And I'm very bullish on Pettersson this year because I think, you know, he came to the league a year ago. We thought of him as this, you know, he had a great shot. But I think people sort of classified him as more of a guy who's going to be a playmaker. And I think people underrated his goal-scoring ability. And he scored 10 goals in 10 games to open the season. So that was quickly rectified. But to me, Pettersson's skill set, it's not just pretty good player. It's MVP caliber player in terms of the ceiling. And I'm going to project him at 40 goals, 45 assists, 85 points. I think he's going to take a leap forward. I mean, last year, if he played the full season, he was going to be in the mid-70s, I believe, his pace.
Right.
Mid to high 70s, right?
Right.
I don't think it's a big stretch. And it assumes that he's going to be healthy, which is not a given because he's still pretty slight frame. And if he takes punishment, he's susceptible to maybe another concussion. Who knows? Then again, you have a guy like Michael Ferland around on the team now to protect him a bit more. I think that'll help. So I don't know. I think I'm going to say 40 goals. And to me,
and they're going to be better too. They're going to be better. They're going to be better.
Yeah.
So So it's not. Yeah. That's. I can see that. I can get on board with that.
Even in the fantasy rankings, I've said as early as this season. Like if someone you know showed me the future and said Pettersson finishes 10th in the league in scoring this year, I'd be like, yeah, okay. Like, I don't think that's out of his range of outcomes.
Definitely not.
Okay, next question is from a Larkin. Yeah, Larkin.
And
Ryan Larkin. Woo! He's not my cousin. There's no Ryan in the family. But Ryan says, is William Nylander going to break out this season and prove the haters wrong? I've written a fair amount about this one, so I guess I'll start. I think he will. And to me, the key was he had to win the job on the first line in camp. If Kasperi Kapanen kept the job and Nylander was buried on line three, then it would be clear, okay, he's not out of Coach Mike Babcock's doghouse. But he is now. And we knew the peripherals last year. The shooting percentage was unlucky. He was a really positive generator of possession. And now he's got the perfect setup, dominated the world championship, which Steven loves. He loves the World Championship, even though, don't get me started, it's not a great tournament. But he's played really well with Austin Matthews in the preseason as well. So I do think that we're going to see a career year, maybe a career year, or at least a return to 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I think you look at how he just his body language and the way that he's been shooting in the preseason, you can tell that he's kind of back. And I think you're right. That World Championship was huge for him. It's kind of funny. He said in the summer that he kind of prefers that kind of hockey. And, you know, it's not going to be as east-west, obviously, in the NHL. But he finds those pockets where he can unleash that shot. And I kind of feel like the number change is big, too. Like, going with 88 that he wore internationally, to us it might seem silly, but, like, you know, the psychology behind being a professional athlete is something that most of us will never comprehend, but it means something to him, and just having that comfort level and for him not to have that glaring spotlight right on him anymore, it's kind of moved on to Matthews and Marner. I think that'll help too, where he can just sort of go about his business, even though he is still a very noteworthy player, but he can kind of operate under normal circumstances now, and I think that's really going to help.
Yeah, I mean, last year was a lost year. It was always going to be that, and history tells us that guys that miss that much time at that stage of their career struggle, and he did. And it didn't surprise me one bit that he put in the season that he put in last year. You know, now he's back, has the full training camp, starting from day one on the first line. I mean, everything seems to be set up for him to have success this year. And he's a player that obviously has a talent that he can exploit that opportunity. And I think he's going to be much better this year.
It's funny. I do think that the 7-goal season for Nylander last year, I think it scared all the RFAs into signing before the season started.
Totally.
I feel like every one of them was just looking at his stats and going, my God, that can't be me.
Nope.
I can't have spaghetti legs for the start of the season.
Yeah.
Who knows? But you know, there's no way of proving that, but it wouldn't surprise me. Next question is from Tony Michaels. This is a fun one. I'm going to answer it first to give you guys time to think about it. Okay? So it's from Tony Michaels. And Tony says, what are you most looking forward to this season? We touched a little bit on it with the Devils. But I'm also looking at the Rangers, Hughes and Kako. It's two markets that I think, I just think the sport's better when these markets are robust. It just brings me back to like the mid-90s when they had a great rivalry. And even in the early 2000s when both teams were very relevant. And finally they both sort of got bad at the same time, the Rangers and Devils. But both are doing an honest rebuild. Both have a lot of exciting young talent. And both made significant changes in the offseason. And both are in a division, which we just called the Blender Division, where anything can happen. So there's a team that I'm going to be wanting to tune into the most just to track their progress, I would say it's the Rangers and the Devils. So that would be my answer. What do you got, Ryan?
I'm going to go with what I think is the best new rivalry in the NHL, San Jose and Vegas.
Wow, yeah.
I mean, there's just so much animosity going back to last year's playoffs. And then you have Ryan Reeves and Evander Kane going at each other basically nonstop since. And I think Reeves launched another volley yesterday where he was making fun of the fact that Kane wouldn't be in the lineup for the next, you know, the first regular season game because of that suspension. I mean, when Reeves and Kane do get on the ice together, it's going to be fireworks. It's almost like the olden days where you knew, like, Bob Probert and Ty Domi were going to fight because it was all leading up to that. And not only that, but you have two very good teams. Like, on top of all the extracurriculars, you're just going to have some really good, mean hockey. They could meet in the playoffs again. It would once again be a great series. And I love when there's that vitriol in the NHL. It felt like, you know, in the past couple of years, we haven't had it as much because it's such a skilled game now and it's such a fast game that teams don't really seem to be developing that kind of animosity. But when it's organic, it's awesome. And I think the Sharks and the Golden Knights have that right now. And I want to see where it goes.
It's like only Nazem Kadri has that. Like, Kadri has that old rivalry in his head, like, during the playoffs. But the rest of the teams in that series last year didn't.
Yeah, yes.
I feel you. Kenny, what about you? What are you excited about,
I'm
little
excited
buddy?
I'm excited about a couple of things. Number one, I'm excited about an angry Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm excited about that. I'm excited about a team that's going to come out and be all business right from the get-go and not let their foot off the pedal and just really kind of try to assert themselves as the class of the league, which they are, I think. Another thing I'm looking forward to is every single game involving two teams in the Central Division that are playing each other, because that's the best.
Just any two teams.
Yeah, any
even
two teams.
Even Minnesota?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had to kind of.
They know who they are.
I was gonna take Minnesota out of it, but I thought it was a little too douchey to do that. And you guys did it, so that's okay. And the third thing is, I'm really looking forward to a 4.5-5 hour game with all the coaches' challenges and like the 17-minute, you know, reviews and everything. That'll be glorious.
It'll be just like watching the NFL.
I want to see the first coach that gets like a minor penalty for too many challenges.
Oh, who's it going to be? Yeah. What's a good pick?
That's going to be so fun.
Maybe Torts. I feel
lose
like
lose their mind.
I think it needs to be John Tortorella just for entertainment purposes.
It's kind of interesting though, because like, would he take that kind of chance?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good call.
That's
interesting.
Fun.
Next question is from Mike Kennelly or Kennelly. I'm going to say Kennelly. Okay, Mike. And Mike asks, who has the best goaltending duo this season? Which is a very fascinating question in today's duo. NHL, because duos mean a lot more than they used to, and like having that proper split. So that's a really tough question. I'm going to say the Boston Bruins.
That's what I was thinking too.
And there's different ways to think of it. You could say like, you know, Vasilevsky, because Curtis McElhinney is a really good backup. But I'm going to say Boston, because at least, you know, last year, both guys, I think they're a good duo, because both, I mean, Tuukka Rask is Tuukka Rask. But Yaroslav Halak isn't just a backup. He's a guy who is still starter good, or capable of being starter good for extended stretches. And he's probably going to start 30 games again, 30 to 35 games again this coming season. So I'm going to go with Boston.
I'm going to go to a bit of a dark horse here and say the Montreal Canadiens.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think you know, I mean, obviously Carey Price is when he's on and healthy, he's one of the best in the game. But I think Keith Kincaid is a huge upgrade. And I think he's going to, like you say, Matt, you know, these games now that these backups start, they have to, they're games you got to win. They're games you have to win. If you have any designs on being a contending team or a playoff team, you got to win those games. And I think this guy is going to be that kind of a goalie.
Yeah, I like your Boston pick, but for the sake of variety, I'll go with Dallas.
I was going to say
Dallas. Yeah, because you got Ben Bishop, and you know, Anton Khudobin showed last year that he could pitch in as much as they needed him to when Bishop was hurt. And when Bishop was healthy, I mean, he was a Vezina contender. He didn't have the raw games last year, I think, to garner enough support for a true Vezina run. But I think he'll have that this season. And again, you can rest him when you need it, because you have faith in the guy that replaces him. So I'll go with that.
What about Chicago with a healthy Corey Crawford?
Like both guys.
I just need to see what that is at this point in his career.
Or you could say the Islanders, just because anything Mitch Korn touches is gold.
Even if it's Semyon Varlamov?
I mean, I'll put it this way. So Varlamov's value right now, I would say, is higher than Robin Lehner's was a year ago.
Before
Mitch Korn got his hands on Lehner.
Right,
so he's at a higher starting point with Varlamov.
Okay.
It's a weird little nugget. Varlamov is a goalie's goalie. I remember talking to Archer's Erbe.
Nice.
For a story like last year, and I was asking him like which goalies he's watching, and he said Varlamov is his favorite goalie to watch. He said because Varlamov is so explosive. Those are the terms that he used.
I'm not sure you want to have an explosive goalie.
I mean, it's like, you know, athletic. I know what you're saying. Yeah, maybe like you don't want to overplay the puck. Next question is from Mark Melanson, and Mark says, I thought the Flyers were going to be a force, but then Nolan Patrick went down. Does it hurt the team? It's hard to. I feel for Nolan Patrick. It seems like he's a guy who, like, they fire the starting gun at every race, and he, like, his shoes
pulls
untied.
Pulls his hamstring.
Yeah, every season.
Or they hit him with the starter's gun.
Yeah. Like, he just
or he actually gets shot by
it. Yeah. It's just he cannot just get a nice, clean start to a season. Now he's got the migraine thing.
Yeah.
So I feel for him, but I guess the question isn't just, you know, is Nolan Patrick going to be okay? The question from Mark is, are the Flyers going to be okay? I personally think they are, because the Kevin Hayes signing essentially pushed Nolan Patrick into the bottom six. Am I right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because I mean, they're top two centers. You know who they are, right?
Yeah. Couturier. I think the Flyers will be okay. I mean, I think the defense corps is going to be better than it was last year. I think Provorov and Gostisbehere are going to take a step forward after taking a bit of a step back last season. And then they're going to have those veteran fortifications that I think will help not only on the ice, but maybe even more so just as guides for those younger kids. And then you get a full season of Carter Hart.
Yeah.
And then you still have a very nice forward core led by Claude Giroux, Jake Voracek, and Sean Couturier, of course. So I think
Travis Konecny.
Yeah, Travis Konecny as well. Yep. I think they'll be fine. It was weird because when they got Patrick, that was like a huge bonus. It's not like they were the worst team in the league at the time.
Yeah.
So it always seemed like a bit of a bonus, and that allowed him to sort of work his way into the lineup. And unfortunately, there have been the injuries that have held him back, but I feel like he's got more time than a normal number two overall pick would have because the urgency for the team wasn't there.
For sure. Very good point. We got time for a few more questions. This one's not a question, but just Steven just sharing. Petra Van Hork said hello from Belgium, which is cool.
Nice.
Hey, Petra.
Petra.
Thanks
Petra.
For Petra. Petra. I think it's Petra, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, thank you for watching, Petra. Hello.
Shout out to Belgium.
Shout out to Belgium. Okay, next question is from Mark M2K. And Mark says, out of all the late RFA signings, who will have the biggest impact for his team? It's interesting because all these RFAs are such high-impact players. So it's basically, the question is almost, who's the best player out of all these big stars?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Braden Point, Mitch Marner?
Maybe. Not maybe, in my opinion.
Is Braden Point your guy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, he had 15 more goals than Mitch Marner last year. He had 90 something points. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best. He's the best two-way player on the best team in the NHL. He supplanted Steven Stamkos as the number one center. Full stop.
Yeah, you can tell with John Cooper's usage.
Oh yeah, and even Stamkos admits it. Right, he's one of the fastest players in the league. To me, he is the star of this star-studded bunch.
Mm. I'll go Mika Rantanen in Colorado.
Mm, okay.
Braden Point's a good one, but I feel like if you're talking about team impact, you know, because they have Kucherov, they have Hedman. Rantanen completes that awesome top line with MacKinnon and Landeskog, so you plunk him back in there, and you've got that Voltron unit reunited.
Voltron, nice Voltron reference.
Well, there you go. So I'm going to go Rantanen.
What's like, Voltron? Remember Power Rangers?
No.
Oh, man.
No. Do I remember Power Rangers?
No, you must know what they are.
You know what's really funny is Ken is actually too old twice for Voltron.
Two
because,
generations.
Like, Voltron was like in the 80s, but then they remade it on Netflix now.
Yeah, and so, my kids are too old for it. So
yeah exactly. Yeah.
Okay, Steven, well, I'm glad
Steven's
that
too
I
young.
That.
Steven's probably too young for Power Rangers.
No.
He's not. Okay, Steven's all in on Power Rangers.
Okay.
Voltron, like Power Rangers was a ripoff of Voltron. Because Voltron was the first a bunch of people put a bunch of vehicles together and create a giant monster robot thing. Or Devastator from Transformers. Shout out to the Decepticons when all the construction robots put together Devastator. Now we're going down a rabbit hole.
I like the rabbit
I didn't
hole.
Expect.
Can we talk about Grimlock a little bit?
The Dinobots, why not?
And they were dumb for some reason.
Yeah, like, they were super.
Like, they're still robots.
They're super dumb.
Yeah. I'm out of here. That's it.
Okay, I got to pick a different answer. I could say Mitch Marner because I think Marner is the one that has the ceiling. You know, Marner's ceiling is score 100 points still, right? Yeah. He was close to it last year, especially based on his relatively limited usage from Mike Babcock. That usage tree is always low. If Marner played, you know, another minute per game, he could get 100 points. But I feel like that's a boring answer. So just I'm going to say relative to dollars spent, I'm going to say Mr. Bridge Contract Patrick Laine. Because just relative to the money that the Jets spent to keep him, on obviously short term, we still know that Laine's got the 50-goal ceiling. It hasn't gone away. And when 30 goals, and I always say I like comparing Laine and Kyle Connor, because like Kyle Connor scores, you know, 32, 34 goals, give or take.
Yep.
And it's, oh, wow, Kyle Connor, let's sign him long term. Patrick Laine scores 30 goals. It's like, oh, my God, he's terrible. Oh, my God, what's wrong with Patrick Laine? And that tells you just how talented Laine is, that 30 goals is considered a failure. And he's still a child. He's still very, very young. Not a child, but you know what I mean. He's built like five children stacked on top of each other.
He's built like a Voltron of children.
Yes, yes, he is. Voltron of children. That is an expression that I did not expect to hear when I woke up this morning.
That's why we come here.
That's right, for the Voltron of children. But Patrick, I still think, impact relative to dollars, Patrick Laine has massive potential. I think we have time for one more question if we got one in the pipeline, and we do. Let's go with Brian McGee. And Brian McGee says, who is the best 1-2 punch for forwards in the NHL? And that's an interesting question because it's, do you go with line mates or do you go with a team that's too deep?
Yeah.
That's tough. I'm going to say I'm going to kick it off with maybe Stamkos Kucherov. I mean, sometimes it's point Kucherov, but yeah. I'll say Stamkos Kucherov because Kucherov has become such a good puck distributor, and this is a chance to plug our next issue. So I do have a feature on Nikita Kucherov, and interview Kucherov and some of his teammates, and Kucherov does he has a set of synthetic ice in his house that he uses in the off season. He just practices all these little passes, and he studies video of his own teammates. And that makes Kucherov the ultimate playmaker because he just knows, he studies where his teammates want the puck. So it's amazing to have a guy who's that good of a playmaker paired up, not always his linemates, sometimes, and of course on the power play, with a guy who's just such a good trigger man in Steven Stamkos. He had the 1 year, 2 years ago that was an anomaly, but that wasn't going to always be the case. He's still an elite shooter, great one-timer, sets up on the power play. So I think those two as a combo are absolutely deadly. So that's my pick.
Okay, I will go for a 1-2 punch on in terms of down the middle, and I'll go with John Tavares and Auston Matthews. I don't think you're going to find any team that's stronger down the middle on its first two lines than the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, what more do I have to say?
Yeah, that's true.
It's a good pick.
Yeah, I was going to say those two as well, but for the sake of variety, I'll say the 1-2 punch of Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand in Boston.
Right on.
They play on the same line.
It's a 1-2-3 punch, really, yeah.
Yeah, it's a 1-2-3 punch with Pasternak. But
no, it's a 1-2-3 punch with Marchand because
he'll punch you three times in the face. Yeah, but the fact that Bergeron and Marchand are also so deadly on the penalty kill, I mean, they just do so much out there, including get points. Marchand, first 100-point season of his career last year. There's no reason to think he won't do it again this year. I mean, the conditions are all the same, basically. So I'll go with those two because they're just so hard to play against in so many different senses of the word.
Okay, excellent answers. And everybody, thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much for watching. We'll keep these live streams going throughout the season, and enjoy the opening puck drop tonight, baby.